All right, welcome back to another episode of Locked On Jaguars, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I am your host, Zach Goodall. Make sure to throw me a follow on Twitter, at @Zach_Goodall, as well as my co-host, Chris Thornton. You can find him on Twitter, at @MistoCristofo. Chris, say what's up to the people, yo.
What's up, people, yo?
You don't have to make fun of me for me trying to rhyme. You know, I could have been...
You trying to fit in with the modern day kids?
I could have been a poet. We are back after a nice long weekend of no Jaguars football, and it was really relaxing, actually, at this point in the season to be able to go a couple of days without having to worry about the Jaguars. Yeah, without having to cry, really. But we have, you know, some topics we want to discuss. They're Jaguars related. They're not as much about the Washington game that's coming up this weekend just yet, because we have a crossover plan with the Locked On Redskins host. We'll be joined by him for a Wednesday episode, which you guys will be able to check out then. We're going to do a little bit of talking about that game, but not too much. We've got some off-season stuff we want to look forward to because, you know, here we are. And there was some news that came out today in the NFL world. There was, I mean, obviously the Jaguars are currently OC-less. They didn't even, they promoted Scott Milanovich, but, you know, it's been interesting. Doug Marrone didn't necessarily give, like, the greatest, you know, confidence boost in him when they promoted him. I wasn't even sure if they fully slapped on that, you know, tag of interim offensive coordinator. I might be wrong, but I feel like I saw someone mentioning that. But the Jaguars are in a position where they have to replace Nate Hackett this offseason, whether that be Milanovich getting the job or an outside hire. And I've been thinking for a while, you know, it's probably going to be inside. It's what they did last time. They don't want to blow it up. They want to run the same scheme with Leonard Fournette here and a new quarterback that can just grow in the scheme, and the scheme will grow itself at that point. But then the Vikings fired their first-year offensive coordinator, John DeFilippo. Chris is a big fan of DeFilippo because Chris's second team is the Philadelphia Eagles.
That's fake news.
You posted a picture in a Wentz jersey. Behind who? Okay, behind the Packers. But anyway, that is a hot name for the upcoming offseason. I don't think he'll get head coaching nods just yet. People thought he would, but the Minnesota offense hasn't been firing on all cylinders. And if you read up on it, it doesn't seem like it was necessarily DeFilippo's fault. He almost seems like a bit of a scapegoat. People believe that the Vikings offense really must have overachieved last year with Case Keenum. And naturally, the idea is to blame the offensive coordinator and blame Kirk Cousins. I think Kirk Cousins has done a better job than he's given credit for. Not that he's been great, but I think he's done fine. I think DeFilippo did a great job with trying to scheme up the passing game with two elite receivers that he's got. But Zimmer's old-fashioned. He's kind of like what they do here in Jacksonville, rely on the run game and rely on the defense. And they kept trying to establish the run, even though pass game would work. And naturally, it brought the entire offense down. And, I mean, if we've seen anything, it's that the Jaguars haven't been able to get any type of passing going. So what if, I mean, but before we get into what makes this really interesting, Chris, would you be a fan of DeFilippo coming here? And what do you think he could do based on, you know, what you liked seeing out of Wentz in his second year in the NFL?
Yeah, I think that's it right there. Seeing how he handled or how he built the offense around Wentz, who was really an MVP candidate last year before obviously tearing his ACL. DeFilippo and Wentz were on a whole nother level. Wentz was just firing on all cylinders. That whole offense was, and they wouldn't have been an underdog in the playoffs had Wentz not gone out. They'd still end up winning the Super Bowl, but I would love DeFilippo here. I think getting him a rookie quarterback to kind of mold the offense around, kind of, I mean, granted the offense is there, but you can kind of play a little more now that you won't have Blake Bortles at quarterback. Mm-hmm. I think Dwayne Haskins and John DeFilippo could be really fun if that's the route that they really wanted to go with the offensive coordinator position.
Now, it's worth noting that Wentz really wasn't that promising his rookie year. There were a lot that were already calling him a bust, right or wrong. Obviously, it ended up being wrong. But at the time, like looking, basing like what they had at that time, it was fair to say Wentz did not perform well in his rookie year at all. But DeFilippo, as his QB coach, really brought him along really well. And he, like you said, he was firing on all cylinders in his sophomore year in the NFL. Things didn't work out in Minnesota because there was clear issues between the head coach and the offensive coordinator in terms of what they wanted to do. But seeing that growth out of Wentz under DeFilippo and the innovation he brought to the passing game, that should have the Jaguars drooling because they've had an issue with their quarterback position for a very long time. And we also haven't seen DeFilippo as an offensive coordinator start his own project. We saw him as a QB coach with Carson Wentz, but as an offensive coordinator calling the plays, we haven't seen him develop opportunity for him to do that, to prove himself if he ever wants to be a head coach. Then a team that's relatively well-built, has some stuff to do on offense, but most importantly, will be taking a new quarterback this upcoming offseason. Most likely, I mean, it's got to be in the NFL draft. And if so, like, that becomes DeFilippo's project as he could ascend his way into a head coaching position. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think that's probably the perfect opportunity. And I'm sure that despite Jacksonville not necessarily being a flashy job right now, I feel like a guy like DeFilippo would probably really enjoy that idea of getting his own guy to groom.
Yeah, the only scary part as a Jags fan would be if you do get DeFilippo and he does really well with Haskins, if he bounces after a year, if he gets those head coaching
Haskins
offers.
You're already ready to go ahead and proclaim Haskins.
Well, I'm assuming he's probably the guy at this point.
Just because he's shot up so well this year, and I'm not as big a fan of Herbert. And we're going to talk more about quarterbacks later. But
his stock is rising. But yeah, we could talk about that a little bit later. But yes, DeFilippo gets the stamp of approval from Misto.
Now, this is where things get interesting. And we can also talk about the defensive coordinator if Todd Wash were to leave, which after this Tennessee game, his seat should be as hot as ever. And I thought they'd want to probably keep him around because the defense has done well when they've been winning this year and the offense has moved the ball. But I don't know if you can keep him at this point after the performance against Tennessee. That was miserable and effortless, really. But here's where the connections start to get drawn. Mike Pettine, the defensive coordinator for Green Bay, former Cleveland Browns head coach. Where was he before Cleveland? Oh, the defensive coordinator for the Buffalo Bills when they were one of the best defenses in the NFL, who just so happened to be under head coach Doug Marrone, the Jaguars head coach right now. And who was Mike Pettine's offensive coordinator in Cleveland when he was the head coach in Cleveland? John DeFilippo. Who was the offensive quality control coach from 2005 to 2006 as an ascending young football mind for the New York Giants under Tom Coughlin? John DeFilippo. There are a lot of connections that you can draw here to Marrone and Coughlin, who I firmly believe will be here next year. Coughlin, I think, will take on a bigger role than what he actually might have behind the scenes right now. And Doug Marrone, I'm confident, will stay as the head coach because I think he's Tom's guy, in which case DeFilippo has a direct tie to Coughlin, an indirect tie to Marrone through Pettine. Pettine, I think, is probably a great fit for this defense if they want to change things up a bit, if they want to have a more diverse scheme. He runs a 3-4-4-3 hybrid in Green Bay. He can change things around. He can utilize guys based on their strengths rather than just kind of plugging them into a certain position and expecting them to thrive in it like Todd Wash has done. And I think that's exactly what this defense needs. And I mean, the connections there with Marrone for DeFilippo, if Pettine were to come here, the connections there with Pettine and directly with Coughlin, you could build a really nice top three for your head coaching staff. If you got Marrone, Pettine, who I'm a fan as a defensive coordinator for this scheme, and DeFilippo, who can totally change their passing scheme and groom a young quarterback.
Yeah, and I mean, if you said it right there about a guy that can use his players to their strengths instead of just kind of putting them into a vanilla scheme, you have me sold. I mean, it shouldn't be that hard.
Right.
As a coordinator to do that, but If that's all it takes, then shoot, you're the guy. Literally just bring me anybody who can
right.
just take this talent on defense and utilize it. That's all you need. It's not like rocket science. It's not like the Jaguars defense of 3 or 4 years ago where you literally had like one guy maybe and you were just trying to do something. It's there. You have, it's probably like tantalizing for some people to say, I get to get that defense. I get to inherit that.
Right.
That would probably be that. It wouldn't surprise me if the Jaguars, if they released Todd Wash, if there was a very strong job market to want to take that position.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that. And there's also another small connection for DeFilippo to, I mean, this is obviously like putting a bunch of strings together. We have no indication if this is a thing. We're just kind of hypothesizing here because it's a Tuesday and the Jaguars played on Thursday last week. So we don't have a ton to talk about. But another thing, Dennis Allen also had DeFilippo on staff when he was the head coach of the Oakland Raiders. And Dennis Allen directly worked with Doug Marrone with the New Orleans Saints from 2006 to 2007. And, I mean, there's just a ton of strings you can connect here to where all of these guys have a background with each other, come from a very similar coaching tree. And, I mean, I don't want them to promote from within. I think that's probably what they're going to end up doing as it stands right now, because that's the easy thing to do. But if you're looking for a way to kind of rejuvenate this coaching staff and bring in flashy hires, there, I mean, I'm not sure if you can find many more worthwhile connections to guys like Pettine and DeFilippo with Marrone and Coughlin. Like, I don't think you could find that with many other guys out there. So that could be something they do. We'll just have to see. This is our TED Talk. like I said, not a ton of content to talk about today, but I put two and two together just this afternoon. I thought this would be an interesting conversation to have. And I think that should just about move us on to our next segment. Chris mentioned the quarterbacks. We've done 4 scouting reports on quarterbacks for the 2019 draft on LockedOnJaguars.com, which you need to go ahead and bookmark right now if you haven't yet, because Chris has a bunch of scouting reports coming your way. I kid, kind of. He better. But we're going to talk about the quarterbacks we've studied so far in our next segment.
You know, ever since I started this podcast, people have been asking me for advice. Usually, it's what team to bet on this week. The truth is, I don't know who's going to win. But if you think you know, you got to check out MyBookie. Remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. That's why I always tell people to bet with MyBookie. Trust me, guys, they're your best bet this season. They've been in the business for years, have great reviews online, and their mobile site is easy to use. I would only recommend a service to my listeners that's been good to me. That's why I'm urging you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay. They have in-game, live betting, over-unders on fantasy points scored, and the most rewarding player perks in the business. MyBookie is slammed with new bettors and wants to give everyone the best service possible. If you're willing to deposit after 7 p.m. Eastern Time, they'll give you an additional $25 free play on deposits over $100. Join now and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use promo code LOCKEDON25 to activate this offer. Visit MyBookie today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON25 when creating your account to claim up to $1,000 in free play. If you're willing to hold out until 7 p.m., you get an extra $25 free play by using promo code LOCKEDON and add 25 at the end of it. If it's up to you guys, but I'd wait until after dinner to take extra money. You play, you win, you get paid.
So we've done reports on Dwayne Haskins, who Chris and I both think that, you know, the sky's the limit for this kid right now. I just finished one up on Justin Herbert. I've come away with noticing the natural arm talent as well as the issues that kind of scare me. On Will Greer, who Chris broke down as a Gator fan himself, that was the most fitting one that he could do, even though he's not a Gator anymore, but Chris had to pull that one. And Daniel Jones from Duke. I got that one done probably a month or so ago, and I'm on to my 4th QB scouting report in Drew Lock, but I haven't done nearly enough to talk about him just yet. But this seems to be like the consensus top 4 quarterbacks in this draft as things stand. And I mean, I understand what people say when they say that this isn't that great of a QB class, because all of these guys offer a lot of different things, but they also all have their question marks.
Yeah. Especially if I'm just going to dive right into Greer, because that's the guy who I did. The highs are high, and it seems the lows are very low for a lot of these prospects in this class. There, Haskins, I think, is kind of cementing himself as the number one right now, but I feel like this is the first class in the last few years that there isn't a clear-cut one. So that's one thing. If you look at a guy like Greer, I would definitely say his best attribute is ball placement. When he's on, he can put the ball in literally only a spot the receiver can get, and some of the throws that he makes are absolutely ridiculous. And then when he's off, he'll just make some boneheaded decision-making skills, and he'll make some really bad decisions, put the ball in horrible spots, turn it over in really bad spots, especially against Kansas when he had, I think, 3 goal line interceptions. So those are definitely the highs and lows of Will Greer. I'd definitely say probably the highest point of Will Greer that I saw was that game-winning touchdown throw that he threw against Texas, and the low being the Kansas game where he throws 3 goal line picks.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, do the Jaguars want to take on someone like that at this point? Because while Blake Bortles might not be as skilled and accurate of a passer as Will Greer, you summed it up in your word choice. The highs were high and the lows were low. And, I mean, we've certainly seen that before, haven't we?
Oh, yeah. I think we've had our fair share of that, which might scare Jags fans. You might want something a little more safe, a little more consistent.
Now, while we've seen high highs and low lows before out of Blake Bortles, we've also seen pressure issues like the ones I noticed from Justin Herbert from another first-round quarterback this team took about, 8 years ago now? Something like that? 8 or 10 years ago? Almost. Wow, it's been almost 10 years since they took Blaine Gabbert.
Oh my God, that's
not wild. That Herbert is on Gabbert's level, because Herbert's also a much more natural passer. He's a good decision maker when it comes to throwing the ball. I don't see him recklessly throwing the ball away while under pressure. He just misses reads. He doesn't get a good feel for what's coming his way from the interior. Sometimes he'll try and run way too early because he gets scared. Or he'll actually end up missing something so badly that he takes a massive hit he didn't need to take. And there's also been times where it seems like he hears ghosts, like he's hit so much because he doesn't pick up pressure, that there could be times where he really isn't getting pressured, but he feels like he is and tries to escape something before something opens up. And really, there was no shot of him getting hit or losing anything on the play. That's not something I'm comfortable with for the Jaguars right now, just with their track record of grooming quarterbacks. I want someone that's got unlimited potential, but I also like a safe floor, and I think Haskins offers that a lot more based on the growth we've seen out of Haskins in his first year as a starter. The downside to Haskins being that it was his first year as a starter, so we don't know how much of this is truly consistent. But I, from the film we do have available, I think I've consistently seen the most growth out of Haskins, which, like you said, is putting him up into quarterback one talks. And I don't want to pat myself on the shoulder too much. People were loving Haskins before I really got on his train, but I didn't see a ton of people dethroning Herbert for Haskins as QB1 until I started doing that. But I do think that those two are going to ultimately be the first two quarterbacks taken, assuming that both of them do declare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like you said, the Haskins QB1 talk didn't really start until about your scouting report. That's when it seemed like the tides kind of started shifting. I think really after that Michigan game is when it kind of went, and then obviously we still have the bowl season. He said it sounds
Jaguars.
It sounds like he's going to play in his bowl game. So
the Jaguars were at that Michigan game.
Well, that's reassuring.
That should be reassuring. Not exactly sure who of the Jaguars were there, but they've been to Ohio State like 5 times this year, and the Michigan game is the latest game that I can confirm they were at. So obviously they're there for someone, and with a lot of offensive issues, I don't see a ton of guys worth going to Ohio State 5 times a year for on their offense right now, other than the quarterback.
Yeah. It's a pretty important position to want to be scouting.
I'd say so. Going there 5 times to watch him also seems like that type of move, that they're going for an important position. And then there's Daniel Jones. His stock hasn't skyrocketed much since I did his report because he faced a lot of tougher competition. And I think he did a fine job against Clemson. But there, I mean, Clemson started taking the game away when they, I mean, his receivers were dropping balls left and right when he was getting them to move. I mean, it was a tie game for like most of the first quarter and into the second. And he was moving the ball really well, but there were a ton of drops at Clemson, like key third down drops Clemson took advantage of, a lot of interior pressure getting to him in key situations. And at that point, I mean, it's Clemson, it's their defense as well as their offense, which can move the ball really well and take advantage of what their defense gives them, to where he just couldn't do anymore. But I still think that if you lose out on Haskins or Herbert, you don't reach for a guy in the top 10 at that point. You take the best player you can get or trade out. But I would still take Jones in the early second round without a doubt if they miss on their dude. Like, I'd probably rather do that than Will Greer at this point, honestly. But yeah, that's just
you
me.
You could get one of these quarterbacks probably top of the second if you had to wait that long. You just take best player available in top 10, which there'll probably be some damn good players available. And then you take quarterback round two. That's probably the contingency plan.
But my question is, let's assume they're picking six, because that's kind of where they've hovered at. They're at seven now.
But
let's just
trade out.
So if you can't land like a really good haul, like let's just assume like we can't assume a trade right now. Mm-hmm. And I mean, both quarterbacks are gone and there's still marquee defensive talent there. Obviously, we don't know exactly which names, but I mean, what would you prefer? Would you rather them go at defensive line again, or maybe Jonah Williams on offensive line if he's there, or Deontay Thompson and replace Gibson?
Deontay Thompson at safety, maybe get that all Alabama secondary going. But there's a lot of talent to be had. It would just be deciding where you want to go with it. Do you want to go offensively? Do you want to take a guy like, I don't know, TJ Hawkinson, if you wanted to reach really that high? For a guy like him, or do you go
big body tight end,
or do you go defense? So it's really just about picking the best player. It might look like a reach now, but if a player is good enough, it's never a reach. So
especially if you need it,
always draft a need. So
that's what I hate. Like, I hate best player available arguments. You draft your need. If it's that bad of a need to you, it's that great of a fit and you like him, I don't really consider it to be a reach.
Yeah.
I think there's definitely excuses for guys going higher than they should that teams can use in their favor.
If you want the guy, then you take him. That's
get
that
the guy. And I think that wraps up our offseason talk for the day. Once again, this has been our TED Talk. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about this upcoming Washington game, not give too much away with our crossover episode coming soon enough, but this game is going to be one for the ages, folks.
Winter is coming and nobody has you prepared like Action Heat. Action Heat makes the world's best battery heated clothing. Heat on demand at the touch of a button. Control your environment with Action Heat. Action Heat clothing is engineered to safely and efficiently deliver heat via heating panels similar to a heated car seat. They can reach temperatures up to 135 degrees and are powered by rechargeable 5-volt lithium-ion batteries that last up to 12 hours on each charge. Action Heat batteries can also be used to recharge your phone and any other gadget while you're wearing them. Perfect for any friend or family on that holiday gift list that might be getting cold a little bit too easily. But they're also great for anyone who works outdoors, skiers and snowboarders, or anybody that just loves the outdoors or hates being cold. Action Heat provides toasty warmth and comfort for your entire body, including heated jackets, socks, gloves, hats, and even undergarments like heated base layer shirts and long johns. Action Heat is available in men's and women's and have great new styles and models just released for this winter season. Make winter activities more enjoyable with a blast of warmth. Action Heat is the perfect solution to keep you toasty and warm, even in the most frigid winter weather. We've got a special deal for our listeners to save 20% off your entire order. Just go to actionheat.com/lockedon to check out everything Action Heat has to offer. That's actionheat.com/lockedon. Or use the promo code LOCKEDON at checkout to save 20%. Stay toasty warm while enjoying all your outdoor activities this winter with Action Heat. And we thank them for sponsoring this podcast.
So the Jaguars have had their fair share of injuries, right? They're missing. They're on like their fourth string left tackle at this point.
Everything.
And second string quarterback. Well, the Redskins obviously have had some brutal injuries happening as well. Alex Smith may never play football again. Colt McCoy is also banged up and done. And Mark Sanchez sucks. So you got that. They signed Josh Johnson, who's been with like 15 different teams in his NFL career. And I mean, I don't think he's
former AF ever number one overall pick.
Has he ever started an NFL game? I legitimately don't believe he has. I think he's played in some, but
yeah, I'm not sure if he's actually started or not.
And he's been in the league since like 2008, a bunch of different teams. Like you said, AAF first overall pick or whatever it might be. It's not promising. So the Jaguars offense might have an edge over the Redskins offense this upcoming week. And like literally who thought the Jaguars offense would have an edge over anyone, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's going to be fun.
That's a game that America definitely... We thought we were sorry for the Titans and Jags game, but we're really sorry for this one.
Yeah, it's going to be absolutely miserable.
If you want to just look at some positives, Harrison likely will be getting his third straight start, and he's been looking good. So
good enough to make Barry Church inactive. It'll be fun. Now, do you have any idea how the Redskins defense has looked throughout the year? I'm pretty sure that they've been solid. In reality, their offense was solid too. But I mean, they are down, I think, two starting linemen as well, fourth string quarterback that they brought up from the A freaking F. I mean, they lost their flashy second round pick, starting running back Darius Geis, to a torn ACL in like his first preseason game ever. So the back not end, too great.
The back end of the defense, PFF rating wise, looks pretty good. Haha, Clinton Dix, who they got from Green Bay, has been playing pretty solid. He has like an 81.1 grade. He's the seventh best free safety at ranking, so that's pretty good. And then DJ Swearinger is also the seventh best strong safety. So they have the seventh best free safety and strong safety. They have Zach Brown, who has been always good at his position at right inside linebacker. He's the fourth highest rated. And then you have Mason Foster, not Reuben Foster, Mason Foster, who is the 65th ranked. So he is obviously the weaker of the two linebackers in a base defense. Defensive line, because they run a 3-4 over there. Their outside linebacker, Preston Smith, 19th overall rated. And then Ryan Kerrigan, who's always good, borderline elite sometimes or not. He's 23rd ranked. And then you have Jonathan Allen, Deron Payne, and Matt Ioannidis. I don't know how to say that. When we cross over, I'll have to ask how that's pronounced. But defensive line's not horrible. It's not great. It's in the 70, right? Almost at 70. And then
How is my son Jonathan Allen doing? If you can pull up his stats real quick, because I was a proponent of the Jaguars taking him with the fourth overall pick in 2017 before they built Saxonville, that is.
Yeah, so Jonathan Allen.
People said that Solomon Thomas was going to be better than him. All right. I laugh.
All right, Jonathan Allen on the year has 30 pressures.
Good. That's pretty good for a strong side defensive end.
What week are we in? 14? Or we just finished 14? He had one.
I think we're going into 15.
All right. So he had he had one pressure against the Giants. His highest game this year was against Tampa Bay and Green Bay, where he had 5 each. Sacks, he has 5 on the year, 2 against Green Bay, 1 against Dallas, 1. Okay, so 2 against Dallas, just 1 in each game.
Right.
Oh, sorry, yeah. 1 against the Giants, 1 against Dallas, and then 1 against Dallas again, and 2 against Green Bay. So that's 5. So, not horrible, not great, I'd say.
I think for a 3-4 defense where he's essentially like a 3-5 tech defensive tackle, two defensive end, because you've got your wide 7-9 guys playing the 3-4 outside linebacker. Mm-hmm. I'd say he's probably playing pretty well. I mean,
yeah,
nothing like Malik Jackson did in Denver, but I think he's growing into a really good role there. So a guy to watch, probably a guy I'll be watching a lot just because I was a big fan of his for this upcoming week. But that should just about do it. We don't want to give too much info away from our upcoming show. So like I said at the start of the show, make sure to follow along on Twitter with us at @Zach_Goodall, @MistoCristofo, and especially at Locked On Jaguars. Bookmark the site, LockedOnJaguars.com. You can listen to our podcast anywhere you can find podcasts. Just make sure to keep hitting subscribe to Locked On Jaguars, and we will catch up with you guys later.